Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Okay, so today on the Explaining History podcast, I'm going to talk a little bit more about Italy at the end of World War One, and particularly a period from 1919 to 1922, which ends with Mussolini's march on Rome. In March 1919, Benito Mussolini forms the first Fasci di Combattimento, the fascist fighting groups, who would later be the core of Mussolini's movement. And he himself had something of an interesting career, having made a radical transformation in 1915 from the left to the nationalist right. He had been a socialist writer and journalist and publisher, but in 1915 he makes the argument that the Italians should intervene in World War One, and he's one of the chief agitators for intervention. He is a very skilled writer, very articulate and very forceful, and takes much of his inspiration from the writings and ideas of Gabriele D'Annunzio. So you might, in your essays, if you're looking at the origins of fascism, be able to draw that kind of line between the two. Obviously, there are lots more people, lots more figures on the scene with these kinds of ideas, but you're not writing a book, put it that way. You're not writing a doctoral thesis. For an A-level essay, it's okay to make that connection. From October 1914, Mussolini was a professional agitator for intervention in the war. He set up his own newspaper, Il Popolo d'Italia, and by professional, I mean that he was receiving funds. He was getting a subsidy from Italian arms companies. So not much of a socialist. Anyway, Mussolini believed, as D'Annunzio had believed before him, that war would forge Italy's national identity, and the reason why Italians had not united as a homogeneous whole so far is because they really haven't had the war to forge them into one. And he believed that a vanguard, an elite, a superman, would be necessary to lead Italian society. He thought that this wouldn't necessarily come from the lower orders, it wouldn't necessarily be a proletarian one anymore. It would be a leader of charismatic quality that would be able to unite the Italian nation in the way that liberal democracy had failed to do so. Anyway, I won't go down the road of describing Italy's war. I think we've previously discussed in the past that disasters such as the Battle of Caporetto, the various campaigns fought against Austria in the Alpine region, had a catastrophic toll on Italy. And the outcome of the Treaty of Versailles, the outcome of the Paris Peace Conference, I beg your pardon, similarly left the Italians feeling, particularly the delegation at the Paris Peace Conference, feeling that they had been shortchanged and that the things that Italy had gone to war for, part of the Dalmatian coastline and the Irredenta lands from Fiume, were being denied to her, which they obviously were. They were being given to the new kingdom of Yugoslavia. So for March 1919, the Fatti di Combattimento are engaging in anti-communist violence, and it's in the eyes of some of Italy's middle classes. This is quite timely because we enter what is known as Biennio Rosso, the two red years, 2 years of very alarming strikes, demonstrations, lockouts, and industrial unrest. And the fear is that a Bolshevik-style revolution may well be visiting Italy sometime soon. The middle classes of Europe looked with trepidation to what had happened in Russia, and they also were also mindful of the fact that Germany had nearly succumbed to a communist revolution, and that very briefly there had been a Soviet republic in Hungary. So the relationship between big business and fascism in Italy was far more intimate and well established than it was in Germany, really, until quite a long way into Hitler's rule. One of the first services performed by fascism to Italian industry was the violent breaking of the Alfa Romeo strike in 1920. This took place in the north of Italy, in Milan, at the centre of the auto business. There was less need for this kind of thing in the south, perhaps because there were fewer proletarians, fewer working class Italians in the south, more of a kind of a more easily suppressed agrarian peasantry. But throughout the Biennio Rosso, the black shirts operate as an auxiliary to state force anyway. In some ways, they echo the role that the mafiosi had played in places like Sicily in the 19th century of sorting out labour disputes in a rather violent manner. And the fact that the state comes to rely on the black shirts even before Mussolini is in power. Mussolini stands for parliament in 1919 and loses, and then is elected to parliament in 1921. Even before Mussolini is in power, the liberal government sees the black shirts as a handy tool. And this in itself might explain the very peaceful transition to handing power exclusively over to Mussolini in 1922. I say exclusively, that's perhaps to misstate the case. Mussolini was a prime minister in a coalition government in 1922, and he cements his fascist rule slightly more gradually after that. So the essentially hired thugs of the black shirts were used throughout 1919 and 1920 as an auxiliary force. And where they went, they destroyed trade unions using physical force, threats, intimidation, and large amounts of castor oil, which they poured down the throats of their victims, to intimidate the organised labour movement almost out of existence. The left-wing elected politicians in places like the Po Valley resigned upon fear of their own lives. And the liberal government and the Giolitti is perfectly happy with all of this. The perhaps what we can see here is a dilemma similar to that faced the Ebert government in the first Weimar government just after the First World War, where the threat from the left is perceived as being far more dangerous than the threat from the right, and therefore the use of groups like the Freikorps or the Black Shirts in Italy was seen as an acceptable compromise. And perhaps in making this gamble, what both essentially, in inverted commas, liberal governments were guilty of was overestimating the threat that the left presented anyway. The indication that Giolitti was quite relaxed about the fascist presence in Italy is that in 1921, obviously, on his National Union Coalition lists for the elections, the fascists were allowed a presence there. And this results in them in 1921 having 36 deputies in Parliament following the election. Giolitti himself evidently got cold feet about his relationship with Mussolini later in 1921. Mussolini breaks his ties with Giannetti and actually sees whether he can have some kind of reconciliation with the socialists and whether the two of them together can defeat the liberal government. Giannetti sees the squadristi as a major threat to him and tries unsuccessfully to have them banned. And Mussolini himself decides to campaign on an outspokenly nationalist programme and founds the National Fascist Party in 1922. The threat that the left sees from this is evident in their attempt to form a national anti-fascist general strike. The general feeling in Italy by 1922 is that the country is potentially heading towards civil war and that something must be done. Before Mussolini considered his march on Rome, he actually sounded out the United States government to see what their feelings would be. Obviously, America by 1922 is retreating into isolationism and really doesn't want a great deal to do with the affairs of Europe particularly. However, the US ambassador at the time suggested that Mussolini might as well go ahead with it. And this, I guess, reflects there are similar views of fascism and Italy that reflected in Britain as well, that, you know, somebody with a degree of stamp of authority needed to take charge in places like Italy. And there's a certain kind of slightly unspoken xenophobic conceit here that the Italians needed a dictator, really, because democracy wasn't in their blood or some such kind of thing. Mussolini became aware of the plans by Luigi Facta, the new prime minister, and Gabriele D'Annunzio to stage a demonstration around roughly the time that Mussolini had planned his march on Rome, to stage a great glorious patriotic march in Rome, which would celebrate the Italian victory, in inverted commas, in the war. And Mussolini quite literally felt that this was going to steal his thunder and felt that this would be a demonstration in support of the Liberal government.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
So decided that he would try to get in there first. And he galvanised about 30,000 men, not all of whom, in fact a small percentage of whom, finally make it to Rome. Most of these are the fascists who are dominating places like the Po Valley, which was the most kind of dominated and most occupied part of Italy by the fascists, and a great many of them spread out and seize control of regional centres, places like Turin, Milan, and the such like. When Mussolini arrives in Rome, his what he represents, his threat, really, to seize power, isn't taken seriously by Factor. Factor thinks that if he's invited into the government, then he'll rule quietly by Factor's side. And really, this was the kind of the miscalculation that the likes of von Papen make in Germany, that Hitler can be controlled, or in this case Mussolini can be controlled. The king seemed to be fairly convinced by fascism, and the king was far more concerned about the threat of communism. The Bayano Rosso had demonstrated to business leaders, to the military, and to the landowners, and to the king over the previous 2 years that any alternative was better, and that having a strong anti-communist leader, a strong anti-communist prime minister, would indeed be a preferable state of affairs to the ongoing threat of communism. Also, King Victor Emmanuel was quite worried that there would be a civil war. Unless Mussolini was allowed to march into power, he would fight his way in, and that was to be avoided at all costs. So really, Mussolini, I mean, and anyone who has sat through even half an hour of an intro lesson on Italian history will know, Mussolini didn't seize power. He was given it. He didn't need to seize it. Power had been arranged for him, or his position had been arranged for him. If anyone is to be thanked by Mussolini for helping him get into power, it is the labour movement itself that presented, after 2 years of protest and the threat of revolution, gave the ruling classes enough of an incentive to want to embrace fascism and see what it could do for them. Anyway, so that's a brief bit on the March on Rome. I know some of my students at the moment will be quite keen to hear this, so make sure you're making some detailed notes. For some people, an exam on this fairly shortly. Now, for everyone else that is looking to find something interesting to read that's going to really give them a kind of depth understanding of the dynamics between communism and fascism, you need to get yourself Chris Kostov's The Communist Century. You can find it on www.explaininghistory.com. Download that today. It will give you a brilliant, precise and accessible overview of communism in the 20th century, the rise and fall. It's well worth investing your time in. Anyway, I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.